Expressing your love can look many different ways, and with the right jewelry gift from Blue Nile, it can truly sparkle. Blue Nile's collection of classic diamond jewelry makes for the kind of gift that speaks volumes without saying a single word. Or switch things up with a sapphire piece sure to spark conversation. Either way, Blue Nile's diamond guarantee ensures you get the highest quality at the best price. Express yourself with Blue Nile, the original online jeweler, at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Off the Beat and Track podcast. I'm your host, I'm Stu Whiffin. It's another week, therefore, it's another episode. Today's episode, oh, you're in for a treat. I sit down with Vince Freeman and just when we get to the end, we find out the most beautiful story about how this album come about. Oh, it is the probably the greatest way to finish a podcast ever. That's not trying to, you know, that's me not trying to hook you in to make sure you listen to the end. It is a wonderful story that I did not see coming. Beautiful, absolutely beautiful. We talk about some great records and we talk about some artists that for the first time ever, I explained that I struggled with one of his picks. I never question anyone's picks. It's their picks. It's all done very lovely, obviously. And I need help with this artist. And it's a lot of fun. We talk about it. As I've mentioned on a few episodes over the 500 and however many I've done now, when you press stop and you still stick about and have a good old chat, the guest has had a nice time, you've had a nice time, and that was very much the case for this. A few thank yous. Thanks to Shane for putting this interview together. Thanks to the team at Blue Murder Club podcast. It's an amazing podcast that if you like your true crime, go check that out. You will even see that some of the guests of Off the Beat and Track have guested on that podcast. So go check that out. Big thanks to Mr. Scroobius Pip and everybody on the Distraction Pieces Network, which this podcast is very much proud to be part of. If it's your first time listening, hello. You're well late to the party, as I just mentioned, over 500 episodes. And when you finish listening to today's Ace Chat with Vince, why not go and explore that back catalogue and catch my chats with, who have we had on lately? I had Hugo White from the Maccabees and Nat 86 TVs on recently, Frank Carter from the Rattlesnakes and formerly Gallows. I've had your big hitters from over the last few years as well. I've had the Killers, I've had the Foo Fighters. I've had the Kooks, I've had the Kaisers. Any more with K? I don't know. Not had Kings of Leon yet. I have to get them on. Stacks of them. If you like your actors, then I've had a bundle of them on, from David Duchovny from X-Files through to one of Britain's greatest actors, Maxine Peake, and Joe Hartley, Thomas Turgoose, Michael Smiley, big rock bands like Motley Crue. I've had Tommy Lee on, had a great chat with Tommy Lee, hip-hop royalty in the shape of Chuck D of Public Enemy, dance royalty like, who have I had? Fed LeGrand. I've had Norman, Fatboy Slim, Cook. The list goes on. There's over 500. Go and get stuck in. If you like your comedy, James Acaster, Ed Gamble, Jade Adams, Maisie Adams. I've had them all on. So go and explore that back catalogue when you finish listening to today's chat with Vince. If that's not enough for you, please support the podcast. That was a very beggy please, wasn't it? Please support the podcast over on Patreon. And let me tell you what you get over there. It's going to cost you 70p a month. It's $1 a month because, well, the country's on its arse at the moment, and so I'm not trying to rob you. So 70p a month, and let me tell you what you get for that. You get access to hundreds and hundreds of episodes. You get access to hundreds of radio shows that are recorded, loads of playlists. You can watch all the episodes. I put all the videos up on Patreon, so if you'd like to watch your pods, you can go and watch them over on that Patreon account ad-free. And you also get invited to the monthly Zoom hangout where we record an episode with you. And so we get all of the the Patriots in a room on Zoom. Some people have their cameras on, some people have their cameras off, and just, you know, just don't get involved. Just enjoy, you know, being there and listening and watching. But it's your opportunity. It's a lovely little hangout. We're doing once a month. We've got one in a couple of weeks where we're doing top five. We're talking about our favourite film scores and soundtracks. So I guess it'd just be people talking about all the lovely films that they've watched, and whether it be Trainspotting, Pulp Fiction, all of them, we'll be a really lovely non-judgy chat. And I'd love you to come along and be part of that. And so all of that stuff costs you $1 a month even. No, it should be a week, shouldn't it? It's a lot of stuff, but it's not. It's $1 a month. And you can find out about that at Patreon, patreon.com/offthebeatandtrack. Go and have a look. There's a little video over there, my silly face, telling you what you get. And you can, if you've forgotten the link already, don't worry. Just go to offthebeatandtrackpodcast.com. And over there you can find links to the socials, because we put up loads of stuff over on Instagram as well, on Facebook and Twitter. Or X, as we have to call it now. But yeah, I'd love it if you could support the podcast, because as I said, I've done over 500 episodes, and this is a labour of love. I do this purely for, there's no sponsors on here. It's done just because I love having these conversations, and I love the fact that you get to enjoy them for free as well. So if you can, put your fingers deep inside them pockets and pull out that 70 pence a month, then I'd be forever grateful. Right, should we get on to the good stuff? Please enjoy today's episode of Off the Beaten Track Podcast with the delightful Vince Freeman.
It's Off the Beaten Track Podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network with me, Stu Whiffin.
Okay, we are recording. Vince, how are you today?
I'm great, thank you. Really good to be here.
Oh, wonderful, mate. Well, I'm looking forward to chatting records with you. Well, look, let's just jump straight in and let's kick things off with the song that you regard as having the greatest ever intro, please.
Right, okay. There are literally thousands. And for me, introductions, kind of the most important thing, because, you know, if you lose an audience, sort of, if you lose an audience there, then you haven't got an audience. I'm a huge fan of Billy Joel. I remember hearing New York State of Mind on the old Grey Whistle Test, if you ever, a video on YouTube. And the introduction to that, it's about a minute long. Mm. But I don't know, there's something about it that just, I don't know whether it's the title or the intro or a mix of the two, but it just transports me to a fictional life that I never had in New York.
I'm interested in what you said there. Like, you know, you were saying about how many, you know, songs there are that you could have chose from, and you know, you've got to get them with that intro. And then you give us this Billy Joel song, which has got a minute before we get a vocal.
Yeah.
And I think in 2024, if you rock up to the label and go, I've got this great song, there's no vocal for a minute. I think they're going to be, well, hang on a minute, what's going on here? Like, this is
not really on the door.
Exactly. And so with that kind of pressure to hook people instantly and get your music on these Spotify playlists and you know, and to try and hook people on TikTok and all of these kind of trends, how much of that filters into your creative process?
Okay. So I feel like one of the reasons why it's taken so long for me to make a record that's, you know, coming out shortly, is that I did feel like, you know, there was a lot of compromise involved in you know, creating something that, you know, that I truly love. And it does. It, you know, I think the short answer is it does factor in.
You
have to. I mean, I listen to every single kind of music you can think of, everything from show tunes to you know, hardcore dance, you know, everything from Queens of the Stone Age to Norah Jones. What I like to do is try and differentiate between what is great and, you know, and what is just, you know, I guess for want of a better word, filler.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that for me, it doesn't really matter about the genre.
Yeah.
So if it hits you in the face straight away, then I was listening to the Idols, the Idols band the other day.
Yeah.
It's about as far away from my style of music as possible.
Yeah.
I heard this one song and I was like, you know, I won't swear, but like,
you
I was like,
you can swear, mate, because they're a fucking great band.
You know, and it was kind of like, it was exciting and it made me, made me want to, you know, engage with that music. It didn't necessarily, you know, it didn't necessarily do anything for me melodically, but yeah. What they were saying and the energy that they were giving, that was it for me. So yeah. I guess, you know, I'm aware of the fact that, you know, in commercial music, if I was to, you know, if I wanted to commit career suicide, I'd do a, you know, 1 minute long intro and make that the radio edit for a single.
Yeah, yeah. You know?
But, you know, I like to try and make music that connects with me and hopefully therefore connects with other people.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Tell me about the first song that had an emotional impact on you, please, Vince.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, that's kind of a no-brainer for me. It was Goo Goo Dolls, Iris. And I literally remember hearing it and I remember going out and buying it. I can't remember whether I'll tell a lie. I don't know whether I bought it. I think I may have got it off Napster, which, so, but I remember immediately wanting to have it in my life. And I remember being at university in my first year, having a pretty hard time of it, to be honest with you. I was doing sports science. I felt like I was supposed to be, you know, a sportsman. And actually, you know, with hindsight, there was this massive part of me that needed to create and, you know, and be an artist and be a musician. And I literally remember being in my room just, you know, when you kind of like dance with no abandon, you know, like Phoebe running in Friend.
Yeah, yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
I remember being in my room just on my own, literally just hands out and just spinning, like spinning round and round in circles and just, and that was the first song I ever remember listening to that really just made me just kind of go, yes, everything's all right.
Did you feel, you know, I've had lots of guests on this show that have kind of echoed what you said there, that went to university and you know, had ambitions to be, you know, a footballer, but music was always next to it. And yeah. I just wonder, in a world of football and you know, there's lots of kind of alpha males in that environment, and I'm generalising a little here, Vince, but did you feel, you know, when you start connecting with songs like Iris, you know, did you feel that you were surrounded by people where you could show that vulnerability and show that emotional, you know, side of what you?
Not. I mean, I grew up in Plymouth where it just was not cool to do anything to do with the arts.
Yeah.
You know, I remember being asked if I would join the school choir because the music teacher had heard me singing in a corridor. And I remember, you know, thinking about it for about 1 second flat and imagining how many times I was going to get beaten up in the playground because I was suddenly, you know, I was suddenly singing in a choir. And to be honest with you, it wasn't even that music was side by side.
Sure.
I got a guitar almost by accident on my 21st Christmas. I went home from university and my mum was working at Becton and Dickinson's, doing night shifts, you know, was putting syringes together. And one of her friends said, "Does anybody want this guitar?" And she was giving it away for like a fiver. And, Christmas Day arrived in a bin liner because mum didn't have any, any wrapping paper, and it was broken, bust up. I never knew how much I needed a guitar until I was given it.
Wow.
You know, so like, yeah, it wasn't even, it was really was one of those moments where like, I didn't know what was missing. I knew something was missing.
Yeah.
I was very frustrated. I kind of, you know, I got on with everybody, but, you know, like one of the lyrics of the, you know, one of the songs on my album is basically, you know, is basically about my only way to, you know, to not be bullied was to fit in. I kind of became a chameleon when I was younger.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people do.
Absolutely.
You know, the whole idea of wanting to fit in, wanting to belong. But I didn't realize the reason why I didn't fit in or belong was because I was, you know, I was missing this really important part of my life.
Yeah. I think school's a very difficult thing to sort of navigate your way through at the best of times. And but, you know, the thing is as well, when we'll get on to school in a moment, but so many people reach adulthood and still, you know, don't find the time or the... Or even know what it is that's missing, and to be able to find, you know, to have someone gift you a guitar and that piece of the puzzle suddenly fits, that's joyous, man. Like what a moment.
Yeah, I'm very lucky. You know, I mean, some of the most interesting people, like, you know, paraphrasing Sunscreen, you know, that song from, you know, early 2000s, you know, some of the most interesting people I know still don't know who they want to be.
Yeah.
And you know, and they're in their 50s or 60s, and but I'm very, you know, I was blessed, really, you know, and I didn't realize it at the time. I was young, dumb, and full of, you know, and all I wanted, you know, I also realized very quickly that, you know, having a guitar and being able to sing was very popular with the opposite sex. Deep down, you know, I could feel it in my heart. It was definitely something that resonated with me. And just, I was like, I need this. This is what I'm meant to be doing. And the other side of it was like, this is a great ride.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So,
Well, look, we've touched on school. So let's find a track that reminds you of your time at school, please, Vince.
Yeah. That's a funny one because, I don't think this guy was even alive when I was at school.
Yeah.
But I heard it maybe 2.5 years ago. I think Sam Fender's a huge talent. And Hypersonic Missiles, it's just got all that arrogance and naivety of youth, you know, but it's also the acceptance that, you know, there's a line in it where, you know, talking about wars and stuff and basically, you know, just being dumb enough to really not know what it's, you know, what's going on and you can't really fix it, sort of thing. But I think musically, this is another song that kind of really affected me when I heard it. The first verse, I was like, who's this guy? Because I'd never heard him before hearing the song. I was like, kind of sounds like the guy from The Killers, sounds like Brandon Flowers, sounds like Kings of Leon, etc., etc. And then this glorious chorus that does, you know, in my opinion, it just makes you nostalgic, makes you want to put your hands out, you know, to either side and spin around and look up at the sun.
Yeah.
You know, and that kind of reminds me of, you know, hazy summers, you know, riding BMX bikes and, you know, my dad having a yellow Ford Cortina.
I mean, that's outside of school. So getting back into school, was that a time of your life that you enjoyed?
Oh, what a life, I guess. Kind of all the highs and lows. I mean, I can't honestly say that I ever really felt like I fit in at school.
Mm-hmm.
I felt, you know, I mean... You know, to give you an idea, for 2 years, instead of having a lunch break, I became a library prefect, partly because I fancied the girl that was also a library prefect, but mainly because I just didn't feel like I had much in common with, you know, I had enough in common with the lads to play, you know, to play all the different sports with them. But I didn't really have enough in common with them to, you know, to.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times.
Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at UH1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too. Like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable, too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
To, you know, talk about the world with.
Yeah.
And, you know, and... Yeah, so... I loved my childhood. I think I probably enjoyed my childhood outside of school more than I did my childhood in school. But I don't I don't think it'd be fair to say that I didn't enjoy school. You know, I think like most people, you look back at your childhood with kind of rose-tinted glasses and, you know, everything was jumpers for goalposts.
Yeah, of course.
You know, if I really think about it, probably, you know, it wasn't like that, you know.
Yeah.
Probably every other day would be a bad day.
Yeah.
But on balance, you know, I had an amazing childhood. I grew up by the sea, you know. it was back in the day where, you know, your parents would kick you out in the summer and go, don't come home till the streetlights come on.
Yeah. Yeah. You know. Absolutely.
That kind of freedom, you know, maybe isn't so much around these days, especially being a parent myself, you know. So
I don't think
I had a great time.
I always find it quite nice, you know, if I'm driving home from you know, wherever, and all of a sudden over the park you see some lads playing football. It's like, you don't see that very often anymore. And it's like, again, with the rose-tinted glasses, you know, I look back and just think, well, every day that's all we do for like 15 hours a day, you know, just one glass of squash at lunchtime. That's all we needed. And like, and I'm sure the realities of it weren't quite that. But I think obviously without sounding like an old bastard, you know, we do live in a world now where, you know, I've got two, I say children, I've got a 19-year-old and a 21-year-old, and you know, telephones, you know, in their hands has become such an integral part of their life, which is a real shame. And you know, I had, well, for the best part of my life, I had three channels of television before I got four, and now they've got a million, and it's really weird because I run a nightclub. And what we've seen, real big changes over the years, is because so much stuff is now on their phone. So if you want to meet someone from the opposite sex, you're on an app on your phone. If you want to hear music that, you know, you might not hear in the club, or you'd go to a club early and pester the DJ to play this new record because you can't get it anywhere, it's not out yet, everything's on Spotify. So you've basically got every single thing you need for a night out. You want to order some food? Pick your phone up, someone will deliver it to you. Someone will deliver your booze. You know, it's like, it's all there.
And this comes back to this whole sort of introduction and, you know, to music and stuff and how, you know, grabbing people's attention. My boy, who is 7, has the attention span of about 1 second.
No, it's crazy, right?
You know, it's what's been really interesting the last few weeks, especially over Christmas. You know, Daddy, can we watch a film? I go, yeah. What about this great film that I loved when I was a kid? Tried to watch randomly Teen Wolf,
yeah,
by Michael J. Fox. The thing takes 15 minutes to do anything.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't remember that.
Yeah.
I just remember watching the film and it being amazing.
Yeah.
But I'm sat there and I'm going, yeah, my boy's bored. Like, and it's only, we're only a minute in. And yeah. Like, he's already going, Daddy, it's a no from me.
Crazy, right?
Yeah, but it is it's not even necessarily a throwaway culture. It's a grab and go culture.
Yeah, yeah.
You can have anything you want at your fingertips, pretty much instantaneously.
And it worries me the impact that's going to have on the creative industries. In, you know, when you see these, you know, the Swedish songwriting teams that are carving these perfect pop gems, but they're almost being carved to suit that attention span that is TikTok. You know, nothing's longer than a minute. You know, everything is just so rapid. And you know, you're looking at, you like you say, you wanted to watch your films. My kids like rarely watch films. They just watch YouTube and TikTok. And it's, yeah. And, you know, we're getting into like old bastard territory here. But there's so many positives that can come from having things like YouTube and Spotify and having all of that music at your disposal whenever you want it.
I feel like it's just new.
Yeah.
That's for me, like, I don't feel like it's old bastard territory. I grew up in a different world. And actually, I just feel like it's new. And I kind of, you know, and as with everything that's new, some of it's shit.
Yeah.
Excuse my friend.
No, absolutely.
But that was the same 25 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, and for me, like, one of the prime examples of that is like an artist like Billie Eilish.
Yeah.
Now, when she first came on the scene, I was like, oh God, what's this? Right. And I did, you know, I guess I was guilty of like doing the old, you know, the old like, oh God, I'm not sure. You know, I don't really get it, this, that, and the other. And then out of the blue, I'm driving along and I think it was Radio 2. They played the 30th. And I'm not kidding you. I haven't been nearly brought to tears from a piece of music, you know, probably up to that point for about 10, 15 years.
Yeah.
And that girl managed to play a movie inside my head.
Yeah.
In 3 minutes. And I was like, wow, okay, now I get it. You know, so I think, you know, coming back to this whole, like, you know, old bastard territory, I think it's just new and that some people, you know, really like to hold on to the things that they know.
Absolutely. You know? Absolutely. Did we actually talk about what song you chose for your school?
Sam Fender, yeah.
Sam Fender, of course. Yeah. Okay, well, let's move on to the next track.
Okay.
And I'm going to ask you to tell me the first song you remember buying from a record shop, please, Vince.
Embarrassingly, it was Grandma, We Love You.
St. Winifred's Choir, mate. Yeah. We all bought it for our nans, mate. We all bought it for our nans.
Yeah, bought it for Nan, and we, you know, and it was me and my sisters. We kind of, you know, clubbed our pocket money together. And it was lovely, and she kept it, you know, kept it till the day she was, you know, she wasn't with us anymore. I guess the first one I actually bought for myself was Wet, Wet, Wet.
Yeah.
End of part one, and I think I've always been.
That's the greatest hits, right?
Yeah. And I guess I've always been a fan of just great vocalists, you know, really exceptional vocalists, and it doesn't necessarily mean that they're perfect singers. You know, I'm you know a huge fan of Jeff Buckley. You know, and then, you know, Dave Matthews, like Bruce Springsteen, who arguably isn't the best singer in the world, you know, but huge fan of big, great, you know, vocals. And Marty Pella was one of those for me when I was a kid.
Yeah.
You know, and like songs like Goodnight Girl and Angel Eyes and Sweet Little Mystery. And even though you couldn't understand some of the words he was saying because he's Scottish, like, you know, That was the lovely thing about when I grew up. Like, Google wasn't a thing. You couldn't just Google the lyrics.
Yeah.
Have a tape.
Yeah, absolutely.
You'd stop it and then rewind it and go, what was that?
Yeah.
I'm like, no, that's definitely, it's not my you know, and you go back and forth until you'd sort of maybe get a little bit of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's weird because it felt around that point, like when Wet blew up in the sort of the tail end of the 80s and into the early 90s, there was just this sort of surge of Scottish pop music that come out that was sort of soulful, you know, at its core. You know, bands like Hue and Cry and Deacon Blue and Texas, they were all coming out. And none of them, I thought, sounded super Scottish. And then the Proclaimers come out and it was like, that's super Scottish right there. Like, that's as Scottish as it gets. they took it to 10.
Great writers, though, like, you know, I think they've kind of suffered from the success of, like, 500 Miles.
Oh, Sunshine on Leaf, mate. Letter, you want a record that'll break you in heart. Letter to America. Oh, my God. Beautiful, beautiful. Seriously underrated, that band. I think, like, they wrote so many. There's a fantastic documentary. There's two, actually. And Matt Lucas, the comedian, done a documentary on the Proclaimers. He's a huge fan. And if you ever get to see, I'd urge anyone. The Proclaimers have come up quite a lot over the years on this podcast, and for anybody that's never experienced watching on YouTube, Hibs fans singing "Sunshine on Leaf," fuck me, it is absolutely goosebumps. It is amazing hearing like 50,000 people singing "Sunshine on Leaf." Is a powerful thing. It's what a band.
Yeah, I mean, without sort of, you know, talking about their sort of infamous track 500 miles, but I don't know whether you ever caught the, I think it was the Commonwealth Games, it was put to ice dancing, and it was just heartbreaking.
Yeah,
it's just the most beautiful thing. And it was like, I was kind of going, yeah, I reckon that's how it was meant.
Yeah,
you know, it was melancholy, but sort of, you know, it was just a celebration of like, that. This is how I got far. I'd go for you.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah, absolutely.
Beautiful thing.
So tell me how things started in regards to, you know, you mentioned that your mum blagged a guitar for a fiver, and then where did it go from? And tell me a little bit about confidence. Because, as you said, you shied away from the choir just through fear of getting shit off of your mates, because no one done that sort of stuff, you know, then. To then find yourself having a guitar, and then I guess at some point you got to get on stage with it, right? And
yeah, I mean, I remember being nervous. I don't remember ever being really nervous. The only time I've ever been really nervous, well, the only times that I've ever been really nervous is when I feel like I'm underprepared.
Yeah.
I feel like I don't know what the hell I'm doing, and yeah, I've got to somehow wing it through this thing. I think for me, the big thing that I've battled with over the years is I can't read music. I don't write music. And to be honest with you, I probably don't 100% know what key I'm writing in.
Yeah.
Or the time signature.
Yeah.
I know if, you know, if it feels like a waltz, it's either going to be 3/4 or 6/8.
Yeah.
You know, for anybody listening that's a musician, they'll probably be laughing at that, but that is the truth.
Yeah.
And I think that very early on, I had the good fortune of kind of, you know, suddenly being in, you know, I was, you know, my first gig was at the Kashmir Club.
Right.
You know, literally my first ever gig was at the Kashmir Club with Lucy Silvers, and Paul McCartney dropped in that night.
I mean, that's some name drop, mate.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't meet him, but yeah, it was back in the day that particular gig, like, it was right at the zenith of that particular gig. It was kind of iconic in its day, and yeah, so that was like my first gig. So I remember sort of suddenly being in a world where people really knew what they were doing.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, I always felt there was a lot of imposter syndrome.
But Vince, I honestly, like, the amount of, I mean, this is probably the 510th episode I've done of this podcast, and I've spoken to hundreds and hundreds of you know, of some of the I guess the most successful musicians out there. And my camera's just disappeared for some reason. And I don't think I've ever really had a conversation where anybody's ever told me that they like to write music. They write songs. And I don't think most people can read music. I think people, certainly working class people on the whole, stumble into it like you did when someone passes you a guitar, there's a guitar around the house, pick it up, or there's a piano, you know, in the family, and they start playing it, and then they start, this sounds good. And then, you know, you know a few chords, and then you can start to understand that song's them chords. I've generally found that most people have trod that path and not like...
I went full time with 10 songs.
Exactly.
And 10 covers. And I remember I used to drive an hour and a half from Cheltenham to Marlow, and I used to do an open mic night on a Tuesday night, and it was never busy. And I used to do my 10 songs, and then I'd do them again. You know, it was crazy, but like, you know, I loved it. I think the imposter syndrome for me has gone.
Yeah.
And that's not because I'm like, oh, I'm now amazing.
Yeah.
What it is, I'm happy in my own skin.
Yeah.
And I'm quite happy that, like, I'm a little bit odd.
Yeah.
I'm quite happy that, you know, I do things like, you know, crawl under the chair of a producer just to record the sound his shoes are making so we can put that into the album. You know, I'm okay with all that.
Yeah.
I wasn't before. And I think that, you know, I think a lot of people, I think the reason why it's so common is that I think it's quite difficult to get to a point where you're, you know, where you're okay with yourself.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's kind of a very difficult thing to do, you know, because it means you're accepting everything, warts and all.
Yeah. If you're comfortable with your flaws, mate, then that's a good thing.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, I'm, you know, I'm not, and I never will be a saint.
Yeah.
You know, I try not to be a dick.
Yeah.
But I'm sure that there are plenty of times that I have been, you know.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, just that, but I definitely, in terms of nerves, it was more about not feeling quite good enough.
Yeah.
Or looking at, you know, I've done loads and loads of shows. You know, I've been on, you know, the same lineup as God knows, loads of people. There's no point in listing, but, you know, household names, you know, for example. And I've been there, and I've remembered so many times where I'm like, I'm in the wrong room.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
You know, I remember doing, it was a covers thing, actually. It was out in Saudi, and I had to sign an NDA, so I can't really say who it was for. But I remember being on this cruise liner, and all the talent was gathered in one room, and this woman came in and said, hi, guys, nice to finally meet you. As far as we're concerned, you are the best entertainment in the world right now. And I turned around to my percussionist. I was like, we're in the wrong room. And part of me genuinely meant it. You know, 20 people there.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, for that company, we were considered to be.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Open the door to big savings with a brand new look with Larson Doors. Now at Menards. Whether you're looking for traditional, modern, or a screen door, Larson Storm Doors are perfect to enjoy the fresh spring air. They come in over 40 styles of storm doors to choose from. Check out all Larson Storm Door options in store and find more great deals in our weekly flyer on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards. The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
The best entertainment out there.
Yeah.
At that point in time, which is like, I still look at that and go, really? You know,
enjoy it.
Absolutely, man.
Okay, let's talk clubbing. Tell me the song that soundtracked your years going to nightclubs.
Nightclubbing. So I was never like a like white gloves.
No, this can be the local right. rock club. This can be a dive bar. This can be wherever you spent your student years partying.
Do you know what? There is literally one song. It did soundtrack my uni, like my sort of, you know, my late teens, you know, into my 20s, and it was Prodigy, Firestarter.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I was listening to that today before we got on this call, and I'm like, banger.
Yeah. Like, mate, it's ridiculous.
Absolute ridiculous. Yeah. You know, it's just like, okay, fine. Like, you know, talking about introductions.
Yeah.
You know, that intro, before you've heard anything, you're like, okay, I'm in.
Yeah.
You know, my coat's off. I'm heading to the dance floor and it's going to get messy.
Absolutely.
You know, it was all over before 5 seconds.
It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous, yeah. That song. And you know, us Essex boys, we're fiercely proud of the Prodigy. You know, they're our own and we love them. And the thing is, you like you say, that intro, that like whining, like synth noise, whatever it is, you're just thinking, where's this going? And then all of a sudden, Liam Howlett just takes beat making to a different point. And, you know, in 1990, what was it, 6, 7? Yeah. You know, you start dropping them beats like he was doing on Firestarter, you know, Smack My Bitch Up and Breathe. It was like, fuck, what? Where's he got this from? He's just like, he's kind of got like the hardest sort of hip hop beats, and he's just got this punk guitar and just. And
this is exactly what I love about all different genres of music.
Yeah.
What you've done is kind of, for me, straight away, you've referenced all the different things that, like, in, you know, in the recording of Scars, Ghosts and Glory, you know, my album, we were referencing, like, on, like, there's one track that you'd never think it, but we spent like a day referencing N.E.R.D.,
yeah.
Alabama Shakes, you know, and then I was like, oh, you know that song, Gonna Take My Horse to the Yoke? I went, that one. And he went, you know who that is, don't you? And I'm like, I don't know. And he goes, Trent Reznor. And I'm like, oh my God. You know, but that's these guys, you know, Prodigy, Chemical Brothers, Daft Punk, you know, these, they're innovators.
Yeah. Absolutely. You
know, it doesn't
Absolutely.
Matter that it's dance music.
And I think, you know, if you was to speak to Liam Howlett, I dare say you would probably find that Trent Reznor and Nine Inch Nails were probably a big influence, you know, in them sort of formative years. Because from making, you know, Charlie and, you know, Everybody in the Place, these kind of happy hardcore anthems, to then all of a sudden, you know, that they're making No Good Start the Dance and Voodoo People, and all of a sudden they're not so kind of novelty rave, and it was like, oh, hang on, there's depth to this band. And then all of a sudden you hear like Poison and you're like, whoa, they've got like the drums on this are ridiculous. And then they just return with Fat of the Land, and that album, like you say, Firestarter, it was just like, oh my God. And I see them at V97 or V98, it was the homecoming in Chelmsford, and they said, like, we're in our own back garden. And I just remember, because Keith was just the dancer, you know, and then all of a sudden you've just got one of the most exciting, iconic frontmen in the 90s. He's now got a mic in his hand and he's screaming Firestarter at you. And it's like, oh my God, this is fucking unreal. It was like, You know, that was so many of that generation. That was probably their Sex Pistols. That was their punk. That was like, that's the shit that your mum and dad's going to go, what's this shit?
Like, literally, I was just going to say that. Like, you know, my manager was the, like, essentially the first manager of Sex Pistols.
Yeah.
Right. And I was listening to it today. I was like, this is punk. This was punk for a new generation.
Yeah.
It was that kind of like, I remember going crazy, but like defiantly crazy, you know, it was kind of like, don't tell me what to do, you know? And it was, yeah, man, great tune.
Love it. Love it. Okay. I'm going to take you home. Favorite song from an artist from your home county, please.
Yeah. I had a long think about this.
What you got down there?
So there's a few, right? And like, I've come up with like, there's a couple of like really dyed in the wall, like big festival acts that are never going to be like huge commercial success, but like they'll headline like big festivals because they're just, you know, so Mad Dog McRae being one of them. Yeah. Land of the Giants being another. I know both of those bands quite well. And they're just, it's just, that's just a party.
Yeah.
Like, you go and see them live, it's a party. And then, you know, and then you've got people like Seth Lakeman, who's a Plymouth boy. I remember taking the mick out of Seth because I was doing a gig once and he was in the audience and I'd lost my plectrums and he gave me this plectrum that was about as thick as a piece of paper. And I was like, what the fuck's this? And then my mate went, you know that Seth Lakeman, don't you? You know, like... And I was like, no, sorry. And then Ben Howard came along.
Oh, and, of course.
You know, and I love it. I loved his first album. He's, you know, he played all the venues that, you know, that I played or wanted to play, you know, when I was younger. And I think for me, the thing that sold it was Old Pine.
Yeah.
On, you know, I can't remember the name of the album, but Old Pine, it's, you know, Cold Sand and Sleeping Bags.
Yeah.
You know, I grew up in Plymouth. I was never more than a 15-minute walk from the beach. I remember, you know, spending my summers crazily sprinting off the edge of a cliff, you know, trying to hit a 6-foot by 6-foot patch of water that would mean that I didn't break my legs. And you know, and I remember all that. I wasn't a surfer, but I lived for the summer.
Yeah.
And there's nothing quite like it. You know, like Old Pine for me, it feels like home because it's a song. I think it's a song about, you know, his summers in Devon and Cornwall.
Yeah.
And it kind of feels like that for me. Even the video. One of the things I used to love doing, especially, you know, when I first learned to drive, every now and again, I'd be able to borrow my mum's car, especially if it was raining and really windy. And I'd drive to the cliffs of Bubbersand and I'd just literally get out my car and just stand and let the wind and everything hit me. I used to love that. And there's a scene in the video that he does that. And I'm like, yeah, that's it.
Oh,
that's,
I love that. You know. Love that.
So yeah, Ben Howard. Old Pine. And I can't play any of his songs because he's ridiculously talented.
Well, you can't read music, so you're fucked, aren't you?
Yeah, give me a month.
Oh, Vince, it's your last track, mate. And I'm going to ask you now to tell me a song that you think many people may not know, but you would like them to hear.
Right, so this is on the basis that... I guess I'm sort of addressing a kind of a newer a younger generation than me. I remember being told to listen to this guy when I was about 20. Hated it for like a month. But I'm very stubborn, and the person who told me to listen to it, I greatly respected him. So I was like, I'm gonna keep listening to this until I get it. Until I get it or I don't, but I need to understand it. And I remember listening to the Grace album by Jeff Buckley over and over again, and there was a eureka moment about two weeks in, and it was this song. I believe he was the last guy to be signed to Columbia Records with an open checkbook.
Yeah.
And he got to make this before he passed. I think The Last Goodbye is like, they're like, all of the tracks are sublime. I think it's the closest thing to a masterpiece. You know, so, you know, it's, what is it, seven songs on the Grace album? But every single one is heartbreakingly good. Last Goodbye is, I feel like it's a song that Kings of Leon would dream about doing.
Yeah.
You know, the Killers would give their right arms for. It's too good, man.
Yeah. I've got to level with you, Vince.
It's also about a minute long intro as well.
Yeah, it's that lovely kind of winding guitar sort of slide at the beginning. It's beautiful.
You know, one of the sounds on that is a saw, a long saw.
Ah, really?
Yeah. They used it as a bow. You know, the back of the saw.
Yeah.
A bow, I weirdly try and find weird details like that.
I've got a level with you, Vince, right? So everybody I know loves Jeff Buckley, right?
Yeah.
And I was like you, right? So I was like, everything says to me, I'm going to love Jeff Buckley. And I bought Grace, like, literally when it come out, like, I'm old. And I was like, I don't get it. I just don't get it.
If you take lyrics out of context, right? So, you gave me more to live for than all you'll ever know. Like, it's the simplicity of it is amazing. Sorry, I interrupted you.
No, because I literally went back. I love Last Goodbye, by the way. Like, that straight away. That's the one that I could get away with playing in my club. And I really, really love Everybody Here Loves You, which isn't on Grace. Which just sounds like an R&B record, a beautiful R&B record.
Yeah.
And I literally, I've got the big deluxe box CD of Grace, and I went back about, I don't know, a month ago and put it on again, and I'm like, and he covers a Smiths record. Smiths are my favourite band, and I'm like, why can't I get Jeff Buckley? And I can't get it, and I want to get it because everyone I know loves him.
I'm going to ask you a question. Do you get Rufus Wainwright?
I don't mind Rufus Wainwright. And okay.
So there's a thing about Rufus Wainwright's voice that is somewhat similar to Jeff Buckley's. People's brains don't like perfect notes.
Well, that may explain, because I think there's similarities with his voice and Matt Bellamy's from Muse. Right. And I loved the first Muse record, but then all of a sudden he went so falsetto so often and it got quite complicated, the songs. And I was
when you don't have vibrato.
Yeah.
Right. See, when you don't have vibration in a note.
Yeah.
For a lot of people, it makes you feel uncomfortable.
Yeah.
It's a physical reaction.
Yeah.
So a lot of people don't get on with people like Rufus Wainwright.
Yeah.
Buckley, for that reason. It took me a long time to get my head around Jeff Buckley. Yeah.
I'm still trying.
There are notes that he hits. They just don't deviate.
Yeah.
And they stay right where they are.
Yeah.
I think it's the purity of it that I fell in love with. Last Goodbye is probably more accessible than stuff like Lilac Wine or Grace, you know. But he was a special talent.
His version of Hallelujah. Like, I will say that I prefer John Cale's, but his version, like, he's fucking beautiful. His voice is angelic, but that album.
Isn't that a beautiful thing about music?
Do you know what, right, Vince?
You know, you're kind of going, I should get it, but I don't. That's okay.
It's so weird because I've never once in 500 episodes ever gone to a guest, I don't really like it, but But with Jeff Buckley, I have to say that because I want to like Jeff Buckley because everything about him, everything, the whole story, I love Tim Buckley. Like, I love his dad's music. But for some reason, it won't sit right with me and I don't know why. But I'm the same with Led Zeppelin. And like, all of my mates are massive musos and they're like, what do you mean you don't fucking like Led Zeppelin? I'm like, I don't know what it is. And they're like...
I have to say, I agree with you. I like their hooks.
Yeah.
I'm not a great fan, but like, you know, conversely, I love The Who. So yeah. I guess that, you know, there is that kind of...
Yeah, I love The Who.
But man, like, I feel like that's one of the things I love about music. And I never used to be okay with this. I never used to be okay with it because I felt like it reflected on me.
Yeah.
Because I was like, oh my God, right? If you don't like this, then you're not going to like this that I've done.
Yeah.
But that's all right.
Yeah, of course it is.
For me, I listen to stuff and I'm like, is it exceptional?
Yeah.
And if it's exceptional, I want to understand it.
Yeah.
And that's it's okay. I feel like it's okay not to like it.
Yeah. It's still work in progress, Jeff Buckley, for me, man. I'll get there. I'll get there. But yeah.
I've got to come down to your club.
Wonderful. Well, look, we spoke about so many other people's music. Let's talk about your music. Tell me what's happening.
Please. I've made an album. And do you know what? It's been a long, long time. I've been doing this for like over 20 years now. And I wouldn't change a note to. I'm absolutely, I've never been prouder of anything. And it's not because, you know, across the board, you know, everyone's going. I mean, that kind of is the reaction, which has been like, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
You know, it's nice when people turn around and go, you did something nice.
Yeah.
You know, you did something good and we get it.
Yeah.
I think I'm more grateful for the fact that there are a huge amount of people, you know, more people than I would have ever dreamed of, you know, now in this, you know, team, there's like 20 odd people, you know, behind this record now that have kind of just gone, hey, I'm in. You know, and by rights, you know, I was serving coffee during COVID because I couldn't work.
Yeah.
And before COVID, I'd drifted ever so slowly, all the while thinking I'm still a recording artist, but I drifted into this world of corporate covers where I was getting paid a lot of money to play other people's songs. And then COVID came along, couldn't catch a cold. You know, couldn't get any writing work, couldn't do anything. And so, you know, and this isn't, this isn't a sob story. This has happened to so many people in the arts, right? So it's not a woe is me. It's just kind of like I had to do something. Otherwise, I was going to lose the house.
Yeah.
So I started a coffee business. I hadn't given up, but I had, you know, I had reached a point in my life where I was like, you know what? No record label in the world is going to, consider looking at me, you know, a middle-aged guy with three kids, et cetera, and go, hey, you're my next signing. You're my next star, you know. So I sort of come to terms with that. And then I served a coffee to a music and entertainment lawyer who happened to have just finished at Jay-Z's Live Nation contract, and he asked me how good I was, and I told him that I was good enough that I didn't need him to blow smoke up my ass. I didn't know who he was.
Yeah,
I didn't know he was a music lawyer. I was just shooting the breeze, I guess, with him because it was quiet and he was my only customer, and I was just chatting away. And very, very long story short, he came back the next day having made a phone call and said, I've got someone coming down to see you. And that's, you know, that resulted in my manager. And so, you know, fast forward, slowly but surely, I've managed to find people that follow music and not trends. And I've,
you know, I haven't had to twist their arm or or break it or bribe them. These are people, I feel like I have the most beautiful team of believers, like behind a record that I believe that, you know, it just needs half a shot.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was my criteria. I was like, you know, give me a tuxedo, give me one chip and get me up onto the Wales table with one hand.
Yeah.
So, because that's what Scars, Ghosts and Glory is about. And I just think the depth in it, and it's weird talking about your own stuff and kind of, and going, yes, it's amazing and you really need to listen to it.
Yeah, but that's terribly British, isn't it, to think like that? And you know, we should be proud of what we do and we should be able to tell people that we think you're going to love this.
And I think the thing for me is that I was always terrified of playing stuff to people until I made this record. And genuinely, if I knew how to find him, I'd give Quincy Jones this. I'd give Rick Rubin it. Because I genuinely believe it's that good. And, you know, I hope that I can continue sitting in this boat and enjoying the ride.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I hope the album gets a chance to be heard, you know, by, you know, the amount of people I feel it should be. Because I think people will, I think that people will get it, you know. I've never been proud of anything. And I, you know, my dreams have been made to come true because I've made the album that I always wanted to make. I've always wanted to be a recording artist and I've been able to do that for the last year.
What an amazing story to kind of like stumbled across that, you know, working, you know, making coffee. That's made my day, that is, mate.
Well, thank you. It's, to be honest with you, it really is. It's kind of emotional and I feel so thankful every day.
Yeah.
That's the bottom line. So, I hope it continues.
If people want to get in that boat and join you on this journey, where's the best place to find out about all things Vince Freeman?
Yeah. I mean, listen, if you Google Vince Freeman, then I think that kind of covers the whole remit, because that way, if you're of a younger generation and you want to find my TikTok account, you know, socials and all that kind of stuff, you'll find it from my website, which will come up. All my socials will come up. So I think probably the best thing to do is just search Vince Freeman, or just go to vincefreeman.com, because that will take you wherever you need to go from, you know, from there. You know, if you're if it's all for the gram for you, then you can, you know, you can find my Instagram, you know, quite easily just from two clicks.
Fantastic. Well, if it's all right with you, when we put this out, we'll tag you on everything. So if people aren't following you already, then they can do so. We also put together a little Spotify playlist, Vince, with all the songs that you've chosen today. And obviously, we'll put your music on that playlist as well. So people can go and that may not know or understand Jeff Buckley yet, go over there and start working on it. Try and understand it and send me some information. Let me know what I'm missing, because I'm determined to be a Jeff Buckley fan.
Can you send me that playlist? I'd really like to hear that.
Absolutely, mate. Absolutely. Vince, I've had such a good time chatting, man. It's been really, really lovely. Thank you so much. It's
been a pleasure.
Oh, thank wicked. You. I'm going to press stop. Don't go anywhere. Oh, wonderful. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. What a lovely man Vince Freeman is. Right, Jeff Buckley, I've got to go back to the drawing board and start again, haven't I? I don't know what it is. It was so lovely to have the conversation with him as well. I've never done that on the show. Just gone, I just don't really like it. And that said, I did like the song choice he chose. But that record, I don't know what it is. Why don't you message in and let me know what I'm missing about the album Grace by Buckley. Go check out Vince's music now and all his picks over on the Spotify playlist. Please go and check out my Patreon account. It's $1 a month and it's Patreon, patreon.com/ off the beat and track. I'd love to see you at one of the little live hangouts. And if you don't feel brave enough to come on and talk, then just sit there with the camera off and your mic off and just listening to a little gang of lovely people that are super welcoming, and we have a super lovely non-judgy chit chat once a month about music. It's not a kind of, yeah, well, I was listening to John Peel when I was four. It's none of that. It's you know, lots of kind of, they're not even guilty pleasures, they're just pleasures, you know. I don't believe in that guilty pleasure stuff. But yeah, there's no shame in whatever you like, and we talk about it all in them live shows. So why not head over to the Patreon account and watch the little video and see what you're missing out on. And you can also watch this episode, this chat with Vince. You can watch that over on Patreon as well if you'd like to see his pretty face and my ugly old head. Other than that, everything else you need to know is at offthebeatandtrackpodcast.com. All right. Thanks ever so much for listening. I will be back next time. In the meantime, be nice to each other, and I will see you soon. Bye-bye.